Good evening, folks. Can you take a seat? The first order of business is to remind us that at the end of our public hearing on March 16th on the Henshaw Road reconstruction project, we adjourned that public hearing so that people could submit written comments. Those have been, a number of comments have been received by Kathy Covert, by the clerk, and are now part of the public record. So I hereby declare that the public hearing for the Henshaw Road reconstruction project, PIN 3753.25, Towns of Ithaca and Dryden and Village of Cuga Heights, is now closed. Thank you all. So I'd like to call them this, what's today? April 6th, 2010, meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature to order. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. And
first, I'd like to ask for a moment of silence, in fact, for two people. One for Les Gifford, who was volunteer fire company firefighter in the town of McLean, village of McLean, and a longtime servant on the ECROC board, and with deep gratitude to Lee Shurtleff, who was an important part of the emergency call to Les's home. But deep regrets to his family for his passing yesterday morning. And Dave McKenna would like to say something about Charlie Bergren.
Charlie Bergren passed away March 29th. He was a 26-year public servant in town of Newfield. He was town supervisor for a number of years, as well as town councilman. And most of you probably knew him as proprietor of Charlie's Towing. Anyway, my condolences to the family, and this time it's very sad for everybody. And Newfield's lost a really good friend.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you all. Can we have a roll call of members?
Ms. McAsey?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Present.
Mr. Proto?
Here.
Ms. Pryor?
Here.
Mr. Robison?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa? Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
I'm here.
Mr. Dennis is asked to be excused. Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Keeper?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
13 members present.
Proclamations, petitions, and communications?
Communications are on the desks.
Thank you. I would like to let you know that we have need to schedule an executive session at the end of the meeting to discuss litigation. So that it shouldn't be a long one, but we have that to look forward to. Are there any members of the public who'd like to speak? We have one person who signed up, Mr. Bernie Hutchins.
Yeah, Bernie Hutchins, 1016 Henshaw Road. At the March 16, 2010 public hearing, just closed, but for which I have earlier submitted this text, Tina Mullenkamp, the ROW acquisition specialist from Hyde Incorporated, began her presentation mentioning the overall process. Primary goal through the process is to negotiate a fair settlement with each property owner. In closing her presentation, she said, the county will make every effort to acquire the property by negotiations. This sounds good because the opposite portion of the eminent domain procedure law says. Section 301, policy, the condemnor, at all stages prior to or subsequent to the acquisition by eminent domain of real property necessary for the proposed public project, shall make every reasonable and expeditious effort to justly compensate persons for such real property by negotiations and agreement. So is everyone happy? No, because in the middle of her presentation she said, I'd like to stress one point. While we use the word negotiator, we in fact work under what is called a one-offer system. We are required by law to offer the full amount of the highest approved appraisal. So, unless there are compelling reasons to raise the offer, we will stand by the one-offer amount. Now, this is a ludicrous contradiction. They wish to negotiate, but the offer is not negotiable. This is the same type of Kafkaesque farce that at the hearing required us to defend our properties against unknown parameters. It gets worse. Let me reread what she said. I'd like to stress one point. While we use the word negotiator, we in fact work under what is called a one-offer system. We are required by law to offer the full amount of the highest approved appraisal. So, unless there are compelling reasons to raise the offer, we will stand by the one-offer amount. It sounds as though she is saying the fixed offer is required by law. Once again, she said, we are required by law to offer the full amount of the highest approved appraisal. This is true. This is a true statement. Section 303 of the law. But she has juxtaposed this to an unrelated, independent sentence, a sentence she begins with the word so, thereby falsely suggesting a consequential relationship. So, unless there are compelling reasons to raise the offer, we will stand by the one-offer amount. She might as well have said, we are required by law to obey the speed limit. Therefore, this we cannot change the amount. There is no such law in play. It is very misleading. Sorry, I doubt this will work on Hanshaw Road. Height speaks for you, for Tompkins County. Do you, the legislature, tolerate this mistreatment of the citizens? When we entered this room, it says on the door, boardroom, apparently because this body was formerly called the Board of Representatives. Now you're the legislature, so you tell us what to do, but you no longer seem to want to represent us. It is time to reverse this situation. Thank you. Incidentally, a week ago I informed R.K. Height that I was intending to present this matter at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hutchins. Is there anyone else from the public who would like to speak? I see two municipal officials out there. Maria and Rich, would either of you like to address the legislature? Rich DiPaolo from the Town of Ithaca Board.
Thank you. Greetings from the Town of Ithaca. I have a few things to report this evening, most of which have to do with planning initiatives and some public works items. First of all, the comprehensive plan update of our 1993 plan is proceeding. The resident surveys have been tabulated and have been analyzed to a degree. It's my understanding, I'm not on that committee, but it's my understanding that the committee is going to begin to look at potential areas that can accommodate development in the town of Ithaca, and to answer the more important question of where do town residents, where does the town want to see development occur, and where should we consider limiting development for various reasons. There's going to be a series of meetings held with neighborhood groups and representatives. Our agriculture report is done. That, as I understand it, is a survey of areas in the town of Ithaca that have agriculture, and also, in a broader sense, is a report of it's an attempt to determine how the town views agriculture, what kind of priority we want to place on that going forward. We're considering the formation of a special committee to deal with the ramifications posed by potential development of the Marcellus Shale. That would inform the comp plan process as it endeavors to deal with regulation of industrial activities in the town. And we just want to extend a gratitude to TCOG for all the good work and information that we've been able to get from them. The timeline of the comp plan has likely been pushed out into 2011. Things just have a way of going slower than you want them to go. We're also informed by our director of planning, John Cantor, that he's going to be retiring at the end of this year. And in conjunction with that announcement, he also seemed to indicate that he would not see the end of the comp plan process. Some miscellaneous planning issues that we continue to wrestle with, issues related to development on West Hill, and potential problems posed by a relatively full-scale build-out up there with regard to traffic and the like. And the issue that the board's been dealing with is how do we supplement the data that currently exists with respect to not only traffic, but also emergency services, general quality of life issues, sewer and water capacity, and so forth. So we're considering a GEIS approach. In conjunction with that, the concept of mitigation fees has come up. That is very, very early in the process. We're just that's strictly a conceptual discussion. But I think there's general feeling among the board that there are some questions outstanding that need to be answered before we can consider a considerable build-out on West Hill. Our stream setback law, which we've been working on for a couple of years, is almost ready for prime time. There was a final round of comments that's being addressed. That law would prohibit certain activities within certain buffer areas of streams, depending on their classification. I would say that's probably a month or two away from seeing the light of day. On the public works front, we're dealing with how to manage stormwater in a general sense in the town, what areas need to be piped, what areas can be ditched, how do you maintain ditches going forward with respect to scraping, seeding, and the like, what are the consequences in terms of erosion. Those are relatively big questions that we're starting to tackle. I think that one of the catalysts there was the ongoing issue of drainage in the northeast part of the town. There's going to be some discussion of that going forward, not only at Public Works, but also in the planning domain. We're also trying to reckon with how do you deal with the with invasive species. Currently, the town doesn't have anybody who's certified to apply pesticides, and we're trying to figure out whether or not we want to have someone certified in-house, whether or not we want to contract with someone in those situations where we need to go out and try to deal with invasive species in sensitive areas. We're developing a 10-year capital plan to try to better quantify not only the capital costs of building, but also the ongoing costs of maintenance of various things. We don't have a lot of infrastructure. We have a public works facility and we have town hall, but the town hall is in need of a roof. Public works needs to be expanded. So there are a lot of relatively high-priced items going on there. Let's see what else we have here. The Forest Home Traffic Calming Plan is going to be phase one. It's going to be constructed this summer. We're waiting for state approval there and for a modified design document to come back from our consultant. That should be any day. We applied to NYSERDA for energy improvements grants to be used at the Ithaca Area Wastewater Treatment Plant, and I'm happy to report that we will be receiving over $400,000 to put toward that effort. We're considering accepting grant money from the Park Foundation to partially fund a new position in planning, which would be that of a sustainability planner. That would happen with in collaboration with the town of Dryden. There are some financial implications there, as the position wouldn't be fully funded. We initially applied for a 3-year funding and received 2 years, so we'd have to determine what the implications are after the initial 2-year period was done, but we're going to consider that at our upcoming meeting on Monday. So if there are any questions, I can attempt to answer them.
Any questions, Frank?
Richard, you mentioned something about the town's effort in agriculture. Can you say again? You don't have to give a
right
30-minute report.
I understand that the county is also in the midst of preparing an agriculture report. That I think this is, as I understand it, this is more or less to satisfy a portion of the comprehensive plan that deals with how to prioritize agriculture in the town of Ithaca. So I don't know much more than that. I would say that you probably want to talk to some of the planning folks about that, but that's one of the questions that we have, is since a lot of our agricultural areas are in areas that are sort of considered to be prime for development, we have to try to balance those two competing forces. So I think this is an attempt to do that.
Thank you.
Carol?
Yeah, hi, Rich. Thanks for coming. You mentioned a series of meetings that the town would hold with various residents about development.
Yeah, well,
how are those being scheduled, and where do people look
again,
to
you have we have you have the benefit of having a liaison from this very body to the Comp Plan Committee of the Town of Ithaca. That would be Mr. Stein. And I think that he could probably answer the scheduling questions, but I presume that the issues aren't going to be limited to those related to development, but there are going to be any number of issues that that affect neighborhoods as well. But perhaps you can ask Peter about the scheduling, because I didn't attend the last meeting.
You had your hand up anyway, Peter, if you want to answer that as well.
Yeah, I'll answer that quickly. Those meetings, there are a group of us who are going to attend those meetings. Together are going to attend those meetings. And we're looking at the last week in May and the first 2 weeks in June at the time when those meetings can take place. And the idea was to try to make some combinations of neighborhoods. Some neighborhoods are very small, some are bigger, so that with maybe less than, say, 10 such meetings, that we could, in fact, have somebody listen and talk with people who are interested in all of the neighborhoods goods that together make up the town. But that's not what I put my hand up for. It's hard to leave one game and go to another one, but when I was still in the other game is the first time I heard about this invasive species specialty and the notion that did it make sense for us, the town, to spend the money to make one of our own staff capable to apply the pesticides necessary to deal with invasive species. And it didn't occur to me then, but it occurs to me now that this might be, invasive species are surely an issue that all of the governments in the county are going to confront sometime or other, and it certainly would sound to me like a waste if they all develop their own in-house independent capabilities for dealing with it, and that might be something for the Council of Governments to think about.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Peter. Dooley has, or Carol, has the EMC talked about this issue? I mean, and obviously it would depend also on which species. There's not just one.
There are several invasive species, and TCOG had a presentation about the emerald ash borer at its last meeting. That's coming, and we will be needing to deal with it.
Mark Whitmore is an EMC associate member, and he's the one who gave the presentation to TCOG. And we have an invasive species committee on EMC, but it's down to mostly associate members and only one voting member. So there's more than enough to look at.
So I can just tell you that this conversation was precipitated by the proliferation of one of the swallowwort species in the vicinity of the Northview Tower, where Cornell also has a wildlife preserve, and they were initially concerned about the effects of the swallowwort on their rare plant species. And I think that opened the door to a broader conversation about, well, what happens in other areas of the town, because these issues are clearly going to be coming before us as time goes by. And at one time, we did have people at Public Works who were certified to apply pesticides, and the issue is whether or not we want to recertify. At one point, the town board, a number of years ago, decided it didn't want to have any pesticides applied anywhere throughout the town, and that may have been the prudent choice at the time, but the landscape has changed, so to speak.
I'll put this on the agenda for TCOG to follow up as a more general issue, so I think it's a good suggestion. Any other questions for Rich? Thank you very much, Rich.
Hey, thank you.
Maria from City of Ithaca Common Council. Maria Coles.
Hi. It's been a while since I've been here, and I want to say hello to the new members of the legislature and congratulations to the new chair. There was a time when I was the person who reported to you regularly, but that's not been the case for over a year. And it's been, this is the time that I signed up for, so here I am, and it's nice to be here. I will begin by letting all of you know that our beautiful new GIEC building will be opening up sometime this summer, and that will be a huge celebration for the entire city. The reconstruction of it is proceeding according to schedule, and as difficult as it was to have the city acknowledge that the building needed attention, I am very, very glad that it is near completion and on schedule. The second item I would like to report on is City Hall security. There has been a bit of controversy surrounding that issue, but there is a history that accompanies City Hall security that many people are not aware of. In 2006, in response to state mandates for that all municipalities provide a secure workplace for the employees, the city assembled a committee that consisted of various members of city departments, city attorney, and I was the county council representative to that group. We wrote a policy which was approved by county council in 07, I believe. We hired a firm to conduct an audit of all city buildings with an eye toward safety. That audit actually showed some gaping problems for various city buildings, some of which were addressed in a fairly easy way, such as shut all doors that couldn't be shut in various city buildings. It did point out two problem areas for the city. One is our GIEC building, and the other was City Hall. The GIEC building, as part of its reconstruction, is going to be addressing the issue of entry into GIEC. There will be, actually there was, even before the building closed, there was one entryway, and some desks will be at the entrance so that not everyone could walk into that building. As you can imagine, there are children there, there are people of all ages there, and it's important that the building remains safe. For City Hall, by the way, part of the another recommendation was that appropriate lighting be placed in various locations, cameras be placed in various locations. All of those things that were not very expensive were done relatively quickly. The issue of City Hall security was part of the recommendation. Regardless of the way in which that was put in effect, fact remains that this was something that the City of Ithaca had been working on, again, since 2006. The reason why it is up again for discussion is because the funding for it was provisional upon review. The review was conducted. There was a questionnaire that went out. All city workers answered the questionnaire. Overwhelmingly, I think, I can't remember if it was 63% or 68% of city employees are very happy with the changes in City Hall. And I can tell you, as someone who spends considerable number of hours there, it is very reassuring. The small coming council closet, I don't dare call it an office, is on the first floor, and it is very reassuring to me to be sitting there late at night with security personnel right there. Everybody who works on the first floor is extremely happy with this. And I will add one more important fact, which is that there have been countless numbers of horrible events throughout the country in municipal buildings and other buildings resulting in fatalities, horrible incidences, and lately some of the right-wing activities throughout the country following a passage of the health care bill, deficient as that was, has resulted in attacks on various offices, horrible words. The N-word were shouted at legislators who were involved in that process, and there is a general aggressiveness rather than the appropriate channels being used for redress that are of serious concern. So the issue is going to come in council again tomorrow. It made it through city administration committee, and there is general agreement, at least in CA, city administration, that this is something that must continue. But that is some of the historical setting for City Hall security that people generally do not know. The second issue I wanted to cover as quickly as I possibly can is the issue of dredging the inlet approximately from where the inlet meets Buffalo Street all the way to the lake. This is a project for which the city received a couple of million dollars. It's going to cost a whole lot more than a couple of million dollars, but there are many reasons why the project needed to be studied and eventually will need to be undertaken. One issue that has led to this is that as the flood control channel has filled in with sediments from rushing tributaries, the capacity of the channel has been reduced by 60%. That means that the potential for flooding in the majority of the city has gone up by that percentage as well. So that is something that cannot be ignored. The other reason for conducting, well, for hopefully doing this project, if we are able to straighten out all the issues that are related to it, is that believe it or not, the Cayuga Inlet has the highest concentration of boat traffic in the country. Now, that is important in the country, not the county. That is important for the area because of the economic force that comes with boating in this area. Of course, waterfront properties are also impacted by this, and waterfront properties are an incredible source of tax revenues. And some of the state agencies involved in this are the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, I'm sorry, not state, but U.S. Corps of Engineers, the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation, the New York State Canal Corporation, and of course the City of Ithaca. These are some of the agencies that are part of a group that has been assembled by the mayor to begin to have a conversation on just exactly how to dredge the inlet. The amount of sediments that could be removed is 470,000 cubic yards of sedimentation, and that raises the question, where can it be put? And I understand that in the past there was some leeway so that some of the sedimentation had actually been deposited in the lake. Now that is not going to be allowed, and so the city has been looking into where to put the sedimentation, and the entire dredging process could take as long as 10 years, and there is a need of about 20 acres of land because some new sedimentation will be put in one pool and another pool will serve as the area where the sediments will be drying. You should also know that the city hired a firm to test the sediments, and according to those experts, there is nothing worrisome about those sediments, and they can basically be used for topsoil, this is what the city has been told. And so now we are in the process of actually having to pick an area. And as you can imagine, that's not an easy thing to do, but that is the final step. If there are questions, I will be glad to try to answer them.
Thank you very much, Maria. Frank? Kathy?
Maria, I can't let the opportunity pass.
Tell me.
A question about two topics.
In Italian or English?
No, I'll do it in English. Because you and I'd be the only ones that understood. First, the question about the silt. Do you know off the top of your head, since the city has made the decision to restore the waterworks and retain the dams, the upper dam, traditionally known as the silt dam, is there, off the top of your head, do you know what the process will be for periodically cleaning that out?
My understanding that that is part of what the city will be doing as a result of our addressing our water treatment issue. It's not necessarily part of
It's not part of the dredging.
No, it is not. That's why I started out by saying that it is not the entire flood control channel that will be cleared by this project.
Okay. The second one is one that's close to both yours and my heart. Could you say what the status of the city's proposed smoking ordinance is?
My understanding is, and I was not on that committee, but my understanding is that it will be going to Common Council tomorrow evening. And if you have you been following it up until now?
Yes, I have.
Okay, a good portion of the comments will be smoke-free.
Do you know? Well, you haven't decided that yet, though.
Well, Common Council will be deciding tomorrow.
What time is the meeting?
7:00.
And do you know where on the agenda that is?
I do not. Sorry.
Thank you.
I take it you feel strongly about this.
Thanks, Maria.
Sure.
Kathy?
Buona sera.
Buona sera.
Thank you, Martha. I was just picturing Frank walking in with his pipe tomorrow night. My question is about the golf course. I have constituents who are concerned because
yes.
At times the proposal for the, what did they call it, the leavings, the takings, the spoils.
The spoils.
The spoils might have been put on the golf course. Is that still an option? Please say no.
Well, it is still an option until a decision is made, but it is a very unpopular option. And keep in mind that this is a process that will take 10 years. So if it were to take less time, then we could consider other places such as the golf course. But 10 years is a long time to keep people off the municipal golf course. And there are many of us who feel that the city's southwest area is the place where this should go, because we would need to keep it going for a minimum of 10 years. And the interesting thing about placing it there is that the drive sedimentation could actually be used to develop the city's neighborhood there. And I'm hoping that it will actually be used as a buffer between the train and the new development. There could be a berm that could be built there. The train is a huge problem for a neighborhood there in terms of noise, in terms of vibration, carbon monoxide, and this would be the perfect solution if it can be used that way.
Thanks for that. It helps a lot. As a resident of Fall Creek, which I'm told was built on a dump, I think that proposal doesn't sound impractical, and the notion of preserving the golf course for municipal and taxpayer use is a great idea.
But that would further delay any housing development there.
Not necessarily, because of the 60-some acres that are there, a portion of them really cannot be used for the new housing development, and that's the portion it's a triangular area closest to Nate's Floral Estates, and it's a considerable area. I think it could easily be 20 acres, and there are many reasons why housing could not be developed there, including the fact that at some point someone lined up several feet of tree trunks, one on top of the other, and to remove them would be an impossibility. So there is this triangular area which the group that we hope will become the city's preferred developer was not interested in developing. So also that development, Martha, was going to be done gradually. So we could begin in one part of the 60 acres and move along.
Okay, thanks for that clarification. Leslin, then Carol, then Dooley.
Maria, could you tell us if there are any more public hearings or meetings or discussions scheduled for the Commons redesign that people should know about?
Yes, there are. But I'm sorry, I cannot remember the dates. I would be glad to send them to you, Leslin.
Could you please?
Yes.
Thank you.
There is one for the
next Monday, the 12th?
Yes. That's one for City Hall, but there is one for the public. I think it's the following day. I think it's the 13th in the Borg Warner room of the library.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Carol.
Yeah, thanks, Maria. I've been asked several times, and since people do watch these even later, I'll ask it now rather than later, about whether there are any, on the dredging, whether there are any options on the table that involve creation of new shoreline, either an island or peninsula anywhere.
My understanding is that the DEC and other state authorities frown on that. Very, very seriously right now, whereas in the past they didn't, given the fact that so much of the festival lands was created that way. But no, we cannot do that now.
Dooley, and then Leslie again.
Dredging is a popular topic. I'm concerned that the city's position still seems to be that flooding is caused by the sediment in the to the best of my understanding, and this comes from some EMC work, that's not very accurate. And I don't know whether the city is at all open-minded on that, but describing it as helping to control flooding seems ill-advised to me. That's just a little input for you. The other thing that I would like to ask you about is the announcement by the Canal Corporation that they will not pay to have something piped as far as Southwest. So that puts a big burden back on the city, I guess. What are your thoughts about that?
We don't know the details of that. We don't know if, in fact, they will not pay for that that extra distance. We don't know what the cost would actually be. It's impossible for me to give you an answer about that. The other thing I wanted to say is that the reason why I mentioned flooding is because, in fact, that is exactly why various state authorities have said about the need for dredging. And I do know that the last time that there was a crisis in Fall Creek, it was a combination of freezing waters. That's the time that I learned the term frizzle, which is what evidently the icy water becomes. It's not a solid block. But my understanding is that was in part related to the fact that the capacity of the flood control channel is impaired.
Well, I guess there's a distinction between the Corps having to keep a flood control channel clear and the natural channels other than the flood control channel.
Yes.
And that's the latter that I was talking about.
Last one.
It was just a quick thing, Mary. I didn't hear you mention it on the change in start time for Common Council meetings. I think
that's
it's important to remind people.
That's right. It will be 6 o'clock. I think it will be not this month, but next month. I can't remember if it is April, if it is May. But yes, coming council meetings will begin at 6. As you can, well, yours begin at 5:30, ours begin at 7. And this coming council is different from prior coming council, and I understood that those meetings went on till all hours of the night, but still 12 o'clock is fairly late to be making important decisions. So
Frank, if you want to go, but tomorrow night it starts at 7, right?
7.
Okay. Peter.
Do I have to go through security, Maria?
Absolutely. You're a very dangerous type.
Especially me.
Peter?
Yeah, Maria, I'm a big believer in the exceptionalism of this little piece of the globe that we all inhabit here. Best place to retire, best city in America, best place to get educated. I believe that firmly. But I guess so does everybody else, because nobody flinched when you said we're the number one boating capital of the country. Surely that can't be true.
It is. I can read it to you directly from this report, which is the executive summary for the site reconnaissance draft report. And here it is. It says the Cayuga Inlet has the highest concentration of boat traffic in the country, and many boat facilities. Well, that's different, but that's what this says. I didn't make it up.
I flinched, Peter. I wrote it down.
So did I. I did too. Like, how's it measured?
Is it possible to get a copy of that? Either
yes,
copy
actually,
or electronic?
Rich asked for it also. Yes.
Thank you, Maria. Anything else from Maria? Thank you both, Rich and Maria. It's great to have these updates. There's always interesting stuff going on, and we appreciate hearing directly from you both. Thank you. So this brings us to legislative privilege of the floor, and I believe Frank is, we're going to start with Frank tonight.
Yep, thank you. I have the distinct privilege of awarding, on behalf of the legislature, the Distinguished Youth Award for this month. Could we have Meredith and Heather, would you mind coming up? The award recipient is Meredith Lawhead, and her mom is Heather Swift. No, come all the way up here, please. You're going to be properly embarrassed. We're doing it tonight because Heather was out of town for normally this is done the second meeting of the month, and we had to postpone it to accommodate your schedule, which was fine. I'd like to read the letter that was submitted by Meredith's mom. And while I'm reading it, do any of you remember the song Simple Gifts?
Yeah.
Just think of that while I'm
sing
reading.
A little piece for us, for those of us who don't know it.
Did you want to sing it too?
No, I don't know it, so I'd like for you to.
I can't. I can hum it while I'm reading. Yes. Are you ready? It is with great pleasure that I nominate Meredith Lawhead for the Tompkins County Distinguished Youth Award. Meredith has shown and continues to show a profound love for her community through perpetual and continual volunteer service. As a divorced parent, my ability to volunteer when my children were small was often reliant on the opportunity to have my two children with me at events. Meredith has looked over my shoulder from a backpack at food pantries while I rang the Salvation Army bell, packed free school supplies for children, or shoveled snow for elderly neighbors. As time passed in a seemingly natural progression, these became family times. Now that she's entered her teen years, she's taken the reins unto herself and uses her time and talents in numerous ways. The following are highlights from her 2009 formal service to the Ithaca and surrounding community. I think you'll be impressed by this list. the Learning Web Summer Participant in the Volunteer Program, the DeWitt Middle School Web Leader Mentor to Incoming Sixth Graders, DeWitt Middle School Food Pantry Collection, Alternative Gift Fair Volunteer Providing and Supervised Activities for young children while their parents were at work or attended the gift fair, the Cancer Resource Center of the Finger Lakes Tabling, the Cancer Resource Center of the Finger Lakes Walk and Run Fundraiser and Walk Participant. Some of us did that too, if you remember, for a couple of years. Cancer Resource Center Independent Can Collection as a fundraiser. The Cancer Resource Center Independent Collection for Change at the Registry in Early Bird Farms. Green Star Cooperative Market. And she has some supporters here that will appreciate this one. The Ithaca Dragon Boat Club. Woo-hoo! She participated, right? She participated as the drummer. We had a team in that. We actually won it. And it hung there for quite a while. She was the youngest team member, and she was the photographer at the Dragon Boat races. Finger Lakes International Dragon Boat Festival Day and Volunteer Runner. Salvation Army Bell Ringer. Member of the National Junior Honor Society and the DeWitt Middle School Honor Roll. Aside from her formal volunteering, Meredith has proven to be a loving, giving, and compassionate young woman. She is the first to reach out to the disenfranchised at her school, to offer assistance, to give of her time, talents, and exuberant energy with a joyful heart and engaging spirit. She amazes, now this is her mom writing, she amazes me. Recently I had spinal surgery. Meredith has seen me go through two bouts with cancer and the death of my brother through her lifetime. But in August of 2009, I broke my neck. She realized that the surgery was very serious. When friends brought dinner, she ushered them in, transferred food, cleaned their containers, and returned right away, offering them drinks. And when she saw that she was tired, or I was tired, she ushered them back out again. What no one else saw was her cleaning up after me when I had a reaction to my medication. This part I will pass over. Suffice it to say, it's very descriptive of what she did to help her family out. I honestly will never be the same. Meredith does countless acts of service that are never recognized. She always is at the ready to assist in what I am doing. She's packed boxes for soldiers, folded church bulletins, planted flowers for church and neighbors, collected box tops for educational programs, knitted hats for neonatal babies, and so on. At the end of the day, she still has time to dragon boat, ride her bike, create amazing works of art, and bicker with her brother. At 14, Meredith has already made a significant contribution to her community, and I appreciate your consideration for her to receive this award. Meredith. One of the reasons that I like this letter, and I know the family, is that we often, around this dais, we often reward and recognize people who've made absolutely stunning contributions to the community. Not that any of these are small ones, but I think this shows the importance of some family ties and some of the things that kids learn from us as parents. And I think the character building here is really important. And some of the places that she's contributed have been really, really impressive, especially at 14 years old. I remember when I was 14, back in '03. I'll say it instead.
You should
of
sing. Day. Don't say anymore. Just sing. Save yourself, Frank.
So at any rate, we have a little bit of a problem, though, this evening. Normally, Meredith, there's a whole cache of gifts here. There's a first aid kit from Bangs. There's Purity Ice Cream gift certificates. There's a plaque from A&B Awards. There's all kinds of Cougar Radio Group goodies that they give you in a box. And, of course, there's congratulations from the legislature with a very, very nice plaque. Unfortunately, because we're off by 2 weeks, all of those things didn't come together and won't until tomorrow. So you have to bear with us at least overnight. But what I would like to do is give you a stand-in certificate, thanks to Kathy. It says the Tompkins County Distinguished Youth Award, March 2010, presented to Meredith E. Lawhead, and congratulations from Bangs Ambulance, Purity Ice Cream, Cougar Radio Group, and the Tompkins County Legislature. You bet. Thanks. You know, we're right in the middle of the census, right? And we were able, Kevin, to his credit, Kevin wants you to have, and so do we, a couple of census shirts, one for you. There's the census piggy bank with some coins in it and two cups. And tomorrow we'll have everything else. Are you sure you wouldn't like to say something? Heather, would you like to say something on behalf of your daughter?
Nothing.
No, thanks. Okay. Well, thank you very much. There you go.
Thank you, Heather. Thank you, Frank. Any other legislators like to address the public? Dooley.
Just two brief announcements. James Hansen, who's the head of NASA's Goddard Space Institute and adjunct professor at Columbia University's Earth Institute, is going to be giving the ISCAL lecture at Cornell in April. It will be on April 19th at 4:30 in Call Auditorium. And the opportunity to get to hear this champion on warning us about climate change is right at hand, and so I wanted the public to know about that. I'm sure they'll hear other announcements about it. The other piece of information has to do with the Vet Schools Incinerator. You may remember that the county has had a representative on the Community Waste Management Advisory Group to that for 10 years now. And we just got word today that tomorrow, Wednesday, in late afternoon, the incinerator is going to be shut down for good. The alternative alkaline hydrolysis treatment method has been checked out and given passing grades by the state. So we are able to switch over and turn off the incinerator. So that's good news.
Thank you, Dooley. Check that one off your list.
Yes.
Leslin?
I want to say congrats to Meredith. They used to live in my district. I remember when I first ran for office. This little girl trying to give me her doll, so she's much more kind than those things said. And you have grown into a beautiful and community-minded young lady, and I know you come by it honestly. I know you do, so thank you for all you do. I want y'all back in my district, so hurry up. Make that clear. As the liaison to the Downtown Ithaca Alliance, I just want to let you all know that the DIA's annual meeting is scheduled for Monday the 12th at 6 p.m. at the Berg Warner Room of the Tompkins County Public Library. They'll be presenting their 2010 strategic plan, or 2020 strategic plan, and a number of other highlights of things that the DIA has been doing. So hope that you can join us for that meeting.
Thank you, Leslin. Pat?
I'd also like to offer congratulations to our most recent distinguished youth, and thank you, Frank, for presenting her to us. I'd like to also offer my congratulations to the Lansing Middle School fifth grade team, who won first place honors at the fifth and sixth grade Thinking Cap Quiz Bowl competition for the Northeast region. We're 14 young people from Lansing's middle school that were involved in this competition, and some of the areas that were covered included math, geography, government, sports, spelling, science, literature, English, history, general information, and just plain fun trivia. So congratulations. Thank you.
Thank you, Pat. Anyone else? Peter, Mike, Pam, and Frank.
I'd just like to make a brief comment about the comment that we heard from Bernie Hutchins at the beginning of the public meeting. I must say that those paragraphs that he read are extremely confusing. I read them. They don't make any sense. It does seem to me that the word negotiate is not the right word to use to describe the process that goes on between the county and the individual whose land we are acquiring. And I do think that somebody on the staff ought to take a crack at describing this process in a simpler, more direct way so that people can understand exactly what it is.
If I could just jump in here, I think, Dooley, if you want to add anything now or during your report on facilities, I mean, John Lampman will be making a report to the committee, at least, on all the public hearing comments. So perhaps that'll be something that he'll talk about.
Well, I will address it a little bit during the committee report,
okay,
but not specifically the wording that the consultant used, which is pretty standard wording.
Okay. Thank you, Billy. Thank you, Peter. Mike.
I had the privilege of attending a panel discussion on the trouble with the New York State Senate here a week or so ago. We had a person from Reboot New York speak, along with a couple of local peoples, Don Barber and Hank DeLay, about some of the problems that the New York State Legislature continues to have. It was a little depressing to hear that, but the good thing is that people are starting to talk about those issues at the state level. And I think that's important, because the more people understand about the history of our state legislature, and it's not only the Senate, it's the Assembly as well, and the governor, the more people will become interested in seeing the kind of serious reforms that need to happen. The other thing I wanted to talk about tonight was the announcement about the change of location of the fireworks. And I'm pretty excited by the fact that the fireworks are going to continue for another year, with the difficulty that the committee that oversees them had in finding a location. It will be in Dryden this year. Dryden is not that far away from the center of our city, of our county, rather. Hopefully there'll be a lot of folks thinking about how we transport people out. There's lots of parking at TC3. Hopefully there'll be TCAT buses, and it will be an opportunity. It is the People's College, TC3, and it'll be a place for people to come and enjoy themselves for this event, which I can remember happening even when I was a little boy going to Scholcall Field to watch the fireworks. So this is a good thing that we will continue to have in Tompkins County. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Pam.
I just wanted to remind people, I've been getting questions from constituents and emails about what is going on with the regulations on garbage transport trucks. Those are still sitting at the DOT. My understanding is that they have every intention of implementing them, but that remains to be seen. There's been a lot of pushback from the trucking industry. On Monday, I'm going to Albany to a meeting. I'm on the governor's task force on these proposed regulations. So perhaps I'll have more information to share when I return. But I just wanted people to rest assured that it's still out there. Obviously, they have not been put in place yet, as folks are well aware of, because they're still getting the garbage trucks going by their houses. But there's still hope that this will actually happen.
Thank you, Pam. Frank.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to just recognize us that there's something took place this afternoon up at Cornell that unfortunately I certainly was unable to attend. I wish I had been able to. The university recognized all of the athletic teams that had brought on so much attention, positive attention, to the university this year. And you always get in trouble trying to prioritize or list them, but you know, certainly the basketball team did very, very well. The hockey team did. The women's hockey team did phenomenally well. I mean, they went all the way to the end, which was absolutely amazing. The women's polo team will, if they pull it off, will be national champions again. Keep your fingers crossed. The gymnastic team, women's gymnastics, are the national champions. They received recognition this afternoon. It was, I'm sorry, were any of the rest of you able to slip up there? I mean, the chances are it's still going on because with all the activities, I doubt that they were able to get it over within 2 hours. It started about 4:30 this afternoon. But the thing I wanted to mention is that...
Wrestling.
Oh, wrestling was the one. Thank you.
Thank you, Julie.
I had an opportunity to travel with two of our colleagues, Joe Mariana and Jim Dennis, to Syracuse a week ago Thursday to watch Cornell play Kentucky. And that was an exciting game, especially those of you that know that my daughter is a senior at the University of Kentucky. It made for a very interesting discussion, believe me. But the anyway, I thought Cornell deserved a pat on the back for what they're doing for the recognition of all the athletes, both male and female. I mean, I think it went over very, very well. Second thing is there will be a recognition. There's a major effort, certainly with the Vietnam veterans, but probably around Memorial Day, there's going to be a... some sort of more of a recognition for women in the military. So any of you that have an interest in that, please, I'll try to keep you posted, but it's only, believe it or not, Memorial Day is just a long month away. I mean, it's hard to believe that it's almost on us. I don't have any announcements regarding NYSEG this evening. They've stayed pretty much out of trouble for the last month. So, but I'll sure to come up with something for you. And I wanted to thank, I'm going to try to beat Martha to the punch here a little bit unless she was preparing to say something. For those of you that weren't aware of it, although I understand an email went out to everyone, I was chairman of the board for about 4 or 5 days. Dooley was out of town, and Martha was visiting her mom for, I hope, what was a very pleasant birthday in California. I tried to dissolve a couple of things, and I couldn't get 8 votes. The one that I mentioned to Martha that I did try was drug court, but some of you were not around, and we couldn't make any headway on that one. But it was, in all seriousness, it was a rather uneventful 4 days or 5 days. But thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Frank and Dooley.
And Frank, I was just a heartbeat away.
Well, I was, for those, if you want to get a good laugh, I mean, this is really unique. I felt like Nancy Pelosi because I was number 3 in line.
Well, I will share with you that a certain county administrator, I wrote in and said, how's Frank doing as chair? And he wrote, well, he happened to walk by the office here and noticed that you were standing right here kind of gazing out at the rest of the room. So other than that, nothing unusual. But thank you, Dooley. Thank you, Frank.
You bet.
Very much. And I've got Brian and Will.
Thanks.
I have to say, an hour before we talked about sports, I guess that's a record for this group. So thank you, Frank.
Last Tuesday, I attended a session at the Groton High School put on by the County Youth Bureau, Nancy Zaylor's folks, and it dealt with adolescent brain development or lack thereof. Very interesting show. It actually helped me out to explain my own youth out there, but at any rate, what it did was it incorporated the presentation that we had about 2 months ago, if you remember the little clickers and all that stuff, dealing with drug and alcohol use in involved in it. And it's my understanding that that presentation is going to be given at various other schools and locations. I must say that this was, although most of the school administration was there and some teachers, wasn't real well attended by parents, and I really don't know why. But it's something that would be very important for parents to hear, a lot of that information. And I liked how they did incorporate the study that they had. So I would urge you to, once you know that this presentation is coming to your community, to try to drum up support and get as many folks out there to listen to it as you can. It really explains a lot in terms of just in your own family, why kids act the way they do. It doesn't change anything in my point of view, but at least it explained it. And it was done very well. So
that's great. Thank you, Brian. Will.
Thank you, Martha. I have been taking full advantage of the orientation sessions that Paula skillfully put together on our behalf. Everybody should be aware that these are continuing through May-April. There are a few more yet to come, including a very big one tomorrow afternoon where you can learn about public works and highway facilities, weights and measures. That's starting at 12:30. I have been surprised that not many people, that is, a number of us have been also doing this, but a lot have not. I know some of you have know that through many years of experience probably have a pretty high knowledge level about the departments. But I have just want to express my appreciation to all the people who have given of their time and answered questions from legislators that were not always as well informed as we would have hoped, but ultimately I think it's been a very, very positive process. And you know, each of these departments is their own amazingly complex little world, and I am coming away with a renewed appreciation for our very, very highly motivated and competent staff. So if for some reason you did not make it to a department, I'm sure almost any of them would be delighted to set up an orientation informally at your convenience. But thank you.
Thank you very much, Will. If there's nobody else, that's a perfect lead-in to our next department head presentation. Is there anybody else for privilege of the floor? Thank you. Well, Lee Sherliff, Department of Emergency Response, has our slot tonight for department head presentation. So welcome, Lee, and thank you very much for taking the time to come.
Thank you, Martha. Just a quick note with Mike and Frank's comments. I'm just so pleased to see how seriously Tompkins County government takes line of succession and continuity of operations. We have such a well-defined succession plan, and that's a message that we're trying to get out to all local governments. So, congratulations. A couple months ago, when our chairman put out the request to departments for an overview of departmental operations or major projects, I volunteered. I knew I had some things that were relevant to items we were working on, and I have to apologize, though I didn't realize in such quick succession and how recently I'd be talking to you about emergency management, mitigation, computer-aided dispatch, and a number of other dissertations. So I apologize you're seeing me here once again so soon. But I hope that I can liven it up and give you a good overview of all of the operations that we have and how they interrelate to some of these subjects. Just by way of understanding, the Department of Emergency Response is one of, I believe, 26 departments in the county. And under the county charter, we answer to the county administrator. And have primary responsibilities in the area of fire coordination, emergency medical services coordination, emergency management from a countywide basis, as well as serve as the public safety answering point for the county and provide the overall communications network. Within the department, we have 27.5 full-time equivalencies. That's down about 1.5 from where we were a couple of years ago. But there's really three key areas that relate to that. And I'm going to start from the right and work over, and that includes the systems that provide voice and radio data communications to the public safety community and other governmental bodies. Communications center itself, which includes 16 dispatchers, 5 supervisors, and 1 manager. And we also have 1.5 people, our assistant director for fire and emergency management, assistant director for emergency medical services, who work with me to coordinate a variety of public safety prerogatives. We relate well beyond the county's borders on a regional and statewide basis and take a lot of direction, some mandates, and work to implement within our public safety community regulations and standards promulgated from the state and federal levels from areas such as the Office of Fire Prevention and Control, OFPC, State Emergency Management, Office of Homeland Security, State Department of Health, County Department of Health we work closely with on pandemic and bioterrorism planning and EMS initiatives, as well as our regional EMS structures, which provide the direction for advanced life support. On a daily basis, our customers, our clients, our people that we interact with beyond the 100,000-plus citizens and visitors to the county who need to access emergency services time to time are the 40-plus agencies that provide public safety response, 18 fire departments, including a component within the airport, 5 ambulance services, which provide advanced and basic-level transport, 13 EMS first response squads, operated by the fire departments who run in conjunction with the ambulances, 8 primary law enforcement agencies, sheriff, state police, city police, 4 villages, as well as Tompkins-Cortland Community College. We also interact with agencies including Cornell University, Ithaca College, New York State Parks, and the Department of Environmental Conservation, who all have very specific law enforcement jurisdictions and responsibilities. We have a variety of mutual aid and multi-agency plans and exercises that we work on to integrate the skills and agencies. And in addition to that, to support the 911 system, we also build databases that provide for 1,863 different types of response configurations. Given where a particular location is, you can have any one of a number of configurations of law enforcement, primary fire response, primary emergency medical response that is within that. And that's, I don't want to call it a nightmare, but it's a challenge for us to stay on top of these jurisdictions and areas and ensure that the proper responses go out. We do that through our computer-aided databases. Tompkins County has over 78,000 unique premises, all of which we've tied to the telephone systems, 34,000 tax parcels, which figure into the county's GIS system, as well as our mapping programs. And we provide training to a variety of responders. Last year, we availed ourselves to state-provided, volunteer locally, and community college instructors who delivered for us 33 different courses to 524 people for a total number of 909 hours instructed and 12,800 hours that were completed by those 500-plus people. Getting down to some of the system specifics, telephone call volume answered through the county's public safety answering point, the 911 center, was close to answered and carried out upwards of 200,000 phone calls. 531 times a day average, the phone rings or we call out to the people that we work with. In the year 2000, 15,800 of those were for 911 calls specifically. Last year, we exceeded 55,000 calls to the landline and wireless 911 lines. Of that, we dispatched 58,000 plus responses among fire, emergency medical services, and law enforcement. Over 160 times a day, we are sending out responders to those calls that are coming in out of the 500 per day. And that's showing us a steady increase of 2 to 3% annual increase in responses. Some statistics we've been able to get from the new radio communication system. Last year there were over 2,145,000 radio transmissions. That's how many times somebody pushed a button and talked on our new 800 megahertz radio system and talked successfully 2,145,000 times plus. I couldn't have talked to that success 5 years ago when we were working on the old systems. Monitored or initiated by dispatch, over 1.4 million of those transmissions were on radio channels and frequencies that our dispatchers monitor 24 hours a day. That's 4,000 times a day they either initiate or listen to traffic on the radio. Just a couple of trends that I would point out to you. When we started in the 911 business in 1997, we started with about 15,000 calls on the landlines. That's all we accepted at the time, had capability to accept. That's a number that's been consistent, that light green color across the board up until the last couple of years when we've begun to dip. You can tell where that's been replaced in the red color, in that the wireless calls that we're taking from the cellular providers, we started to take in the year 2000, and eventually all the providers in the county directed their calls to the 911 center. Those have increased in numbers from a couple thousand in the first year to over 43,000 last year. As I mentioned, our incidences are only increasing 2 to 3% a year, but the call volumes have risen dramatically, and that has to do with the ability, with the equipping of so many people with cell phones. We're also seeing the people start to transfer to the new technology. Landlines are decreasing. We're seeing that in the revenue surcharge. We're also seeing that in the actual volume of activity in the center. This has made for some interesting challenges. I was over to one of our local campuses a couple of months ago, and I was struck and took a picture at the time, and then I found another one, or my assistant found one on the internet that was probably, or a couple of them that are a little more clear. But I looked at a row of telephone, payphone booths, and not one telephone was still there. And if you go throughout the community, the payphones have disappeared from pretty much all locations. It's a dying business. And it has to do with the fact that, well, the fellow in the upper right-hand corner, why would you use a payphone when you can pull out the phone in your pocket and make the call? And that really takes us back to 1997 when we designed and configured communication systems, hardware technology, and software technology that really related to the phones on the left that are quickly being outnumbered and replaced by the types of phones and devices on the right. What does that mean for us? It means that the information, our databases that we created on landlines exclusively in the 1990s, have diminished not only in the amount of call volume, but in the type of information they provide us with. It's moved us to implementing what we call Phase 1 and Phase 2 wireless technology, where we've enabled ourselves to be able to receive latitudes and longitudes, coordinates, from the cell phone hand devices as well as from the systems. This, what I'm showing here is a mapping that program, pictometry, which we overlaid to the county's GIS system, which allows us when we take a wireless call and we're able to get those geographical coordinates, be able to pinpoint those not only on the county's GIS and tax parcel maps, but overlay them with overhead aerial photography so we can go right down to a very close level and find the landmarks closest to where that call is coming from. It's technology that is certainly necessary based on the mobile society that we have, but it's yet very new technology, very imprecise from the standpoint of the types of phones that are out in circulation, the fact that so many of them are dependent upon having a clear view to three or more satellites, or they may very well be network-based systems that require access to multiple transmission points. And some of our cellular networks aren't strong enough to be able to triangulate signals. So while we have the technology in place, it's improving with time, we have a lot less good information to work with when a call comes into 911 than we did when we started the system, based on the movement of people to the new phones. But that's an area that we continue to work with. It's also an area that it lends itself, going back to the devices, is that we're having to look ahead to what's called next-generation technology and the change in demographics and the change in expectations of the public. We have people that would like to text us a 911 call today or send us photographs or streaming video from the phones. The phones have the capability to do it, and within the cellular networks themselves, you can send that information. But we're built on a public infrastructure and a private infrastructure that hasn't anticipated those needs, and we're moving toward those next-generation 911 technologies and studying that very closely. The 55,000 911 calls aren't the total amount that we're taking in. Last year, incoming calls were 164,000. We still receive calls on the seven-digit lines that were formerly the sheriff's, city police, our 273-8000. There's a lot of administrative and non-emergency calls that come in that need to be processed in the center. But we look very closely at the consistency of the 911 calls. Overall, we've begun to see a decline in that total number of calls, which is a great thing, and I'll explain to you why. We peaked out at about 200,000 calls into the center, and almost, I don't want to call it unmanageable, but a very, very challenging amount of telephone calls for our dispatchers to take with four or five on a shift. We've started in 2 years to see a decline. The reason is, and I can point this out as a success, a performance measurement on your radio system, we were able to take a lot of cell calls and landline calls out that the responders were making to the center because we had unreliability in the radio communication systems. The radio system alone has alleviated a tremendous amount of the administrative traffic. And with the continued efforts to improve our computer-aided dispatch and put mobile data terminals into the cars, we believe we're going to be able to bring those numbers down even further and allow the dispatchers to concentrate more on the management of the call than they are in acting as a switchboard, which we sometimes feel we do. Incidents dispatched, just kind of some interesting trends to the agencies that are going out consistently since we consolidated the law enforcement. We've dispatched about 35 to 40,000 law enforcement calls per year. Fire calls, the red ones on the bottom, have seen a steady decline from 5,300 in 2005 to a little under 4,000 in 2009. It's not that we don't have as many fires. I think what you'll find is that we are having continued success with fire prevention programs as well as our capable code enforcement that's taking place in the community. But the one area that's of concern and one where we're keeping a close eye is the middle part, the lime green color, emergency medical services. We're seeing increases yearly of a significant percentage from a little over 10,000 in 2005 to almost 14,000 last year. I think a lot of it relates to our aging population, and I think we need to begin to think about, and we're tracking the types of trends we have, but start to think about ways that we can work within the community to lessen this demand on the EMS system. One thing that's been suggested is that our largest emergency medical services call volume has to do with falls. Falls in the home, falls in the street, falls in the facility. Much of that to do with our elderly population. Maybe we should be looking to do fall prevention type programs throughout our human service agencies and public safety. Things to keep track of and how we may be able to decrease these numbers and improve the safety of our community as a whole. Major accomplishments. When I took the position 8 years ago, we had some three or four key items we were looking at: the radio system, consolidation of dispatch, as well as development of some of our planning and training. What we've been able to do is pass a comprehensive emergency management plan, build the emergency response center, centralize the dispatch operations, adapt at the federal government's regulation and multi-jurisdictional haul hazard plan that included just about all of our municipalities in the county, as well as follow through on dozens of items that were identified as mitigation strategies, as well as, I can't read that last one.
Groundbreaking for the communication system.
We broke ground in August 2006, cut over to the new system in December of 2008. In 2009, we incorporated the wireless 911 Phase 2 capabilities, and now in 2010 and into next year, we hope to complete the final phase of the communication system with the upgrade of the computer-aided dispatch, re-implementation of the mobile data system, as well as an integration of our records management systems. We've done all of that, at the same time been able to manage over 1 million phone calls, 300,000-plus dispatches, a major flood in 2006 that resulted in over $2 million, $2.7 million, I believe, in FEMA funding coming back to restore the public infrastructure. And and last but not least, compliance with a number of directives from the state and federal government regarding the implementation of the National Incident Management System. And that was a system that was developed as a result of the 2001 terrorist activities. It's broadened to implementation in all hazards approach. I was pleased when Martha made mention, as well as Legislator McKenna, about a couple of the people that that were part of putting together our system. Les was one of many people that helped us move from the old-style system. I hate it when they use that picture up in the corner. You can tell I've got a lot of gray hair now. But moved away from the pen and the paper and the rotary dial phones and the single station. Mike Lane provided me with that photograph he found in some historical records to what we have today. And Charlie Bergen was one of the community leaders that not only pulled a community in support of building out a couple of radio communications towers, but when I got in a jam, was able to bring me town equipment as well as his own personal equipment to help get some roadways and opened up and project completed. And it's those types of people, those types of boards and the agencies that have really provided us with the success we've measured today. Moving forward, when we can decrease the calls and continue to rely on the new technology, we really want to focus our efforts on improving the quality of the services that we provide through our dispatch operations. And one challenge that I'll mention, Paula always says I should end with the fiscal and financial challenges. We've invested well over $20 million to provide our dispatchers and our public safety responders with the tools they need to communicate, the information they need to make good decisions and use of resources. The challenge that we have is that these are systems that need to be replaced. They need from time to time to be refreshed, and it'll be part of my challenge to make sure that working with the state and federal governments and the local bodies that we have the funding to sustain these over time. And we continue those efforts with looking very intently at the state legislative budget with potential partnerships that that still are on the horizon with the statewide wireless network or what its successor may be. And we've actually engaged nearby counties in the region at looking at an expansion of our system. So with that, I present to you an overview of current and past activities of the office.
Thank you very much, Lee. That's a terrific look at the whole department. It's an incredible amount of the word complexity certainly stands out here. So thank you. Mike.
Lee, that was a great presentation. I also attended the program last week that was up at TC3 for municipal officials. You spoke, and Cheryl Nelson and other folks that have been very involved. Joe was there to talk about the importance of emergency management and to try to get the message out to the towns and villages and cities about these emergency plans. and I hope that we can continue to keep that interest up there because it's so important. Having one of my first experiences in 1981, when I had been mayor of the village of Dryden for 6 months, we had a flood. And I'll tell you, there was none of this support, none of this planning at that time. And it's so important. It's so helpful. And we can have an emergency anytime. We had a wildfire in Newfield this week. Montezuma Swamp has had a wildfire up there. We can have floods. We can have tornadoes. We can have any number of things, and they can happen tomorrow. And this kind of emergency planning needs to be kept up to date every day, every year, for all of the municipalities.
Well said.
Thank you, Mike. Anybody else? Questions or comments? Peter.
Lee, I missed I didn't follow the explanation for why it is over the past 2 years the total volume of emergency calls has been going down.
The calls to the actual telephone calls have decreased by about 35,000, and what we are attributing that to is the heavy usage of the new radio communication system. We, by putting the simulcast radio system in and covering the dead spots, we've been able to take a lot of the day-to-day telephone transmissions that were done by cell phones or going to a landline phone to call dispatch and track units. That actually can all be done through the radio system today.
You mean the number of calls by the people are not dropping, but the route that those calls take to the center.
The calls by the responders and the agencies we work with are actually working through the radio system rather than through seven-digit or 911 telephone lines.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Carol?
Do you keep data on sort of types of calls by categories? It would be interesting to see that because I was going to... I noticed that the calls to overall emergency calls of any sort seems to have more than tripled since 2000, from, 15,000 some odd to 35,000 some odd, at the same time that the incidents dispatched didn't have that same kind of disparity. So I'm just wondering, are you getting more calls per incident?
Pre-2005, the numbers wouldn't have been complete in that we hadn't completed the centralization of services. And once all the dispatching components were together, we were able to create a baseline. The number of telephone calls continued to increase and then started to decrease, as we were just talking about. Actual incidents dispatched to the public safety responders remains on a 2-3% increase every year overall. But we do monitor those individually, and we can tell you what types of calls are being dispatched, what type, whether it's a structure fire versus a chimney fire versus an automatic alarm, or a motor vehicle accident versus a property complaint versus a burglary. And we actually use those as a part of our call review process to go in and pick out certain types of events to make sure that they're being dispatched appropriately.
Isn't it also used to be you'd get a call for a motor vehicle accident. Now everybody who drives by calls on the cell phone.
There was a day when somebody would volunteer and drive to the nearest phone line and call it in, and today if we have an accident out any of these streets, we probably will take 6, 7, 8, maybe more calls. If it's out on Route 13, we'll get a lot of them.
Right.
One of our public, we've talked about it with Marcia, we need to do some public information campaign and develop some public knowledge so that people will stop, let us know if there are injuries, and fix the location they're in, because if they're talking to us as they go down the road, which they shouldn't be, that location is changing on our mapping as they go.
Right. So. Good point. Let the public education begin. Well, I will. Oh, I'm sorry, Frank?
Go ahead.
All right. Okay.
Well, I had the privilege of visiting the
Emergency Response Center. And Lee, thank you very much for taking time to show me around. The part that I found most interesting was being led into the secure area and just observing as the 911 response operators were dealing with real calls. The level of tension in the room, which may have all been in my mind, but it was palpable. It was sort of amazing, and they were just calmly getting the information, and with aid of very sophisticated mapping programs, being able to locate it. And I think we are very fortunate to have a system that is running this well. And I would encourage others to go up and have a look.
Thank you.
Frank?
Thanks, Martha. Lee, the observation you made about the calls and the fall, some correlation between one category of calls and perhaps doing more education in fall prevention. Are you going to do an analysis of this? And perhaps there's other areas that we ought to be paying some. I wrote that one down because it may be something I want to talk to Lisa Holmes about regarding through COFA we could do something. But are you doing an overall analysis of that type of thing?
Yeah, that's a product of a system, not to carry this out much longer. We implemented the emergency medical dispatch a couple years ago, which requires a little bit more questioning of callers when they call into 911 to determine the extent of the emergency, if it requires a hot response, lights and siren, or cold response, whether advanced life support is likely to be used versus basic life support, and so on. But it gives us these determinants on the types of calls in the age categories. And Beth Harrington, who is the assistant EMS director, has looked very closely at it. And Beth had made that suggestion and is actually providing us with further analysis. And we have talked about it, taking it on to these other agencies. And I see it as a real constructive way to use the information that we now have access to, we never had before, to actually be able to work for a safer community beyond just providing the mechanics.
Good. I mean, this sounds like a decent planning tool. It really does.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much, Lee. It was very helpful, very informative. All right, thanks, everyone. Hello, Joe. Joe was our ambassador at Albany for the day, so you'll have a chance to report in a minute. Paul will have a chance to report as well. For my report, just very briefly, the retreat planning group, which is about half of us and half of the department heads, meets tomorrow. Just a reminder, tomorrow at 5 o'clock. And I believe that's in the courthouse, in the conference room down the... Is that right, Joe? Is that... I'm sorry, is the meeting in the courthouse conference room or across the way?
Courthouse.
It's the courthouse.
The courthouse, okay, thank
courthouse.
You.
Courthouse, PDEC will be meeting in the...
PDEC's in the old jail, that's right. In your red folders, I had sent this out by email today. You've got a hard copy of a statement that I wrote up. I'd like to submit this to the EPA. They're doing a public scoping process on the study of hydrofracking. Soliciting public comment, and asking for who would like to be stakeholders in this process. I've already sort of sent us in as interested stakeholders. I would like to submit this this statement as well, and would love to have as many individual legislators as possible sign on and agree with that. So you can either let me know later or respond to that email. If possible, it'd be great to send it tomorrow because they're having an important meeting on this tomorrow and Thursday. So those would be submitted on the web. Thank you. County Administrator, start with Paula.
I was supposed to say that the County Administrator is en route from Albany and should be here in just a few minutes. So pay no attention to the man behind me. I just have a statement or two. But I wanted to, first of all, thank you, Will, very much for mentioning the county department visits. As a reminder, there was an email that was sent out to all legislators last Thursday. In case you've misplaced the calendar, we gave you the April one with a few updates. And so please contact those departments if you'd like to schedule a visit. I wanted to take this opportunity to also inform you that on Friday, March 26th at 2:18 p.m., we submitted our formal response to the Google request for information with regard to their community to fiber's trial of their ultra-high-speed broadband technology. Many thanks to all of you, to members of TCCOG, a number of Cornell staff and professors, and local business people for providing the data and other information that was needed to actually complete that RFI. I also wanted to offer special thanks to Deb Grantham, Assistant Director, Environment and Natural Resources, Cornell Cooperative Extension, and to Ken Schlaughter, Executive Director, Cornell Cooperative Extension, Tompkins County, for their direct assistance in preparing sections of the response. Additionally, Greg Potter, Lee Shurtleff, Jonathan Wood, and Joan Jerkwith of our Planning Department, and our Public Information Officer, Marcia Lynch, for standing over my shoulder and being my fresh eye before I hit the send button. I am certain that I know more now about Tompkins County than I ever imagined. For example, did you know that there are 39,404 utility poles throughout the county? So if Google doesn't come, please call Alex Trebek to let him know that after this information gathering exercise, I am sure to win the Jeopardy Daily Double. So I want to thank you all very much. It was a very interesting experience, and cross your fingers.
Thank you. And should we do anything like have our next meeting in a hot air balloon, or, you know, is there anything that we should...
See, I was going to do the Eva Knievel thing and suggest that our county administrator... custom designed suit, parachute, you know, this is Google Tompkins County on it. Lee Shurtleff was going to be standing by with the EMS folks just in case, but that's what I thought would be a big winner for us. He, on the other hand, thought the deputy should dive into Cayuga Lake. Obviously, we're not going to do either one of those.
All right, Paul, we'll take your suggestions. Pam?
Well, on a more serious note, I hope. would it be of value for the legislature to write letters, or I had the feeling that a cheerleading section was an important piece in this, and getting the Chamber of Commerce or, you know, our towns and villages to add their voices to this. Is this something that we should be trying to get people to participate in?
I have the ideal response to that. And actually, I'm going to pass around a little handout that I prepared, so thank you for making that comment. Our friends at Cooperative Extension graciously established a web blog for us, which gives you all an opportunity to provide statements of support, the local municipalities, any information, data, statistics, video, graphics, images, whatever they'd like to actually add some strength to our response and to enhance the basic information that, I shouldn't say basic information, but to enhance the information that Google requested we could do that. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to pass around a little sheet, and I also sent around an email to all of the legislators so that you have a link to the blog. You can go on, you can visit just to see how it's laid out and structured. And anything that you would like to have posted, you can just email it to me, and I'll make sure that it gets on.
Is that something that the public can add in?
We're actually connecting this directly to the application. However, there is a section on there where you can provide a comment. Google also has a comment section on their site. So any individual that wants to make a comment about this initiative can also visit their site as well. But this particular blog is there to supplement our formal response.
Okay. And I did submit a letter that... It also referenced the 2009 article that was in the U.S. Airways magazine as a pretty glitzy statement that had been made about Tompkins County. So that's in there. But I, you know, other input is certainly welcome. Thanks, Pam. Mm-hmm. Frank, did you have your hand up?
I'll pass right now.
Carol.
I had my hand up. If we haven't already done so, I think it might also be good to be in touch with the group at Cornell who were so helpful as we were contemplating whether to put together an application, who themselves are in touch with contacts of their own at Google. I think that would probably be helpful.
Sure. Actually, just send me an email, and I can send you that list of the folks that had the original meeting with us at Cornell on March the 5th. Are you talking about the one that you and I and Mike attended?
Yes. Well, my sense is that they may be interested in even technically seeing a copy of the materials that we submitted, or just getting some feedback on what happened so that they can be in touch with their contacts.
Right. They're aware. Let me just clarify one thing, because when you mentioned about having a copy of what we submitted, unfortunately, there's not a copy. The application was a total online application. It was organized by seven different screens, if you will. So you had to have a specific logon and password to access the screen. And what you see is what is on the screen at that time. In other words, if you have access, you can scroll up and down, but there's no print option, to do this. And even now, if you log back in, what you get is a grayed out application. It's like a shadow of what you submitted, but you don't have any access to any of that. But by all means, you can come by my office and I can share all my paper copies and all of my emails with you, but there's no real formal copy of the whole response.
It's a new world. Mike?
I just can't say enough good about the job that Paula did here, working with Deb Grantham, who did a wonderful job, and Ken Schlauter, bringing this to our attention and doing the hard work of bringing so many people. I just am totally in awe of the talent we have here in Tompkins County to bring something like this to bear in less than a month and put it through. If Google passes us by, it's going to be their loss.
Thank you, Mike. I would second that. And, Paul, it's just, it's the sort of thing, somebody has a crazy idea and they say, well, Paula can do that. So we're really extremely grateful. So thank you very much.
And Martha, we did consider a publicity stunt. We were going to have you dive into a tank of sharks, but unfortunately the mayor of Miami already did that.
Well, if anybody clicked onto Google on April 1st, you saw Topeka achieved, and that was pretty clever. So it's hard to top that, Frank.
I think we need to hold off on that kind of stuff until after Pam has the final census count done. We can't afford to have anybody diving into anything.
Oh, that's true. We need their
right
account.
Are you
volunteering, Frank? We have to find out if they've sent in their form yet.
Then they can jump, right.
All right. Thank you very much, Paul. Anything else? Thank you.
I'm going to turn it over to Jim.
County Administrator, welcome back, Joe.
Thank you.
I know you were expecting and hoping that we'd be finished by 6:15, but here we are.
You just got back from Syracuse, Joe?
No, the morning period has ended. Oops. In Syracuse over the NCAA, so I have not been in Syracuse. I've been in Albany for most of the day, and maybe that's a good place to begin my report. Maybe where I should begin is I think I'm going to delegate to Paula my reporting every couple of weeks at this event, because her report is a lot more engaging and entertaining than mine usually is, which is consumed with budgets and all these terrible
that's true.
Things. So you may see her more permanently in this seat. A couple of things in my report. First of all, thank you for all of you who participated in the retreat. I thought it was time very well spent. Our goal is to, as our decisions regarding budgets get even more difficult, we want to make sure that those decisions are quality decisions, and that's where we're all trying to go, and I think that retreat took us a large step in that direction, and we're going to be working over the next couple of weeks to try to really make that into a working model of decision makings that can apply to our budget this year and in the future. So thank you very much for your very active participation in that. I did go to Albany today to continue our dialogue with the State Insurance Department about our longstanding issue of the Health Benefits Consortium. Today's meeting was all about finances. It didn't relate to labor participation, which you know is one of the thorniest issues that we're dealing with right now on the consortium. Today was about finances. The goal was to try to wrap up issues that relate to the money side of this proposal. I think most of you do, the primary money issue right now relates to reserves and how much money should be basically accumulated as a reserve within the health coalition. And a reserve is called for in these arrangements because if ever the coalition stopped doing business, there's still bills that come due. So let's say that we close shop at the end of December of next year. There's still bills that will come from doctors and hospitals and so forth that will have to be paid. So a reserve is appropriate and important to make sure that you've got enough resources to cover those bills at the end of the road. The question is how much those reserves should be and the timing to accumulate those reserves. I will tell you that this discussion has come fairly late in the issue as the state insurance department really digs into things and looks at what's been proposed, specific numbers, calculations, and comes to opinions that they do seem to shift a bit. At the same time, again, today I think we got a much better sense of what some of the state's concerns are with reserves. We had a chance to talk about very specific number goals that they have in mind. We also talked about ways that we can satisfy reserve requirements without requiring necessarily large cash outlays by any municipalities, things like providing a surety bond, for example, or other things that might allow resources to be allocated to make sure that those reserve requirements are met. I'm hopeful that as a result of today's meeting, we will begin to bring to closure the financing issues that relate to the consortium, and we'll be left with just one, which is labor participation. I understand the unions are continuing to meet about their position on labor representation. I'm hopeful that that will get wrapped up in the next couple of weeks. So in the ideal world, a couple of weeks from now, when we meet again, we can start talking about something that's a lot more final than it's been over the past several meetings. I'm hopeful that that can happen. It may take another meeting beyond that before we can bring all this to closure. So, again, long day in Albany. I think it was productive. I found it informative. We got our views across, and, again, hopefully that contributes to bringing this to closure. I think those are really the major items of my report, and I'm certainly happy to take any questions you may have about particularly the health coalition.
I just want to say first, we owe a debt of gratitude to Don Barber. I mean, you and Steve Lossi, you know, it's in the job description. Don Barber is doing this as chair of TCOG and chair of the consortium board, and he's not giving up. It's great. Really be hard-pressed to have this happen without his support. So.
And Don was there at the meeting today. It was Don Barber, myself, Steve Lossi, who is our consultant, his partner, Marty Cahill. Two members of state insurance were there in Albany, and three or four joined us by phone from the insurance department offices in New York City. And you're right about Don Barber. Regardless of how this ends, this county should do something for Don Barber. He's been incredible at this.
Nathan and then Frank.
Joe, the issue of reserves, aren't we required to have significantly more reserves than the private insurers are supposed to have?
Well, that's the difficulty, Nathan, where the Article 47, which is what we're organizing under, looks at us almost like we're a private insurance company.
Okay.
So if you look at Article 47, it says that you should have 25% of your premiums in reserve, which is extraordinarily high. So that has been negotiated down to 17%. And there's still a desire for some movement beyond that 17%. But your point is the point that we drove home today, I think, in Albany. We're not a private insurance company. It's not as if I began an insurance company, and to make sure that I had adequate resources, if I went out of business, to cover all those claims, I need to put up money. We're governments. And we have essentially made a moral obligation to this consortium, so if the consortium ends, And there are assessments to municipalities. We're morally obligated to pay those. We have taxing powers. We have strength that doesn't exist in a private insurance company. So the reserve requirements should be substantially different than a private company. And that's what we argued today.
Right. It's my understanding that when Article 47, it's 47, right?
Yes.
When it was established, there was heavy lobbying by the insurance industry to have such a high reserve as a major barrier to entry so that people don't do this.
Well, we are, again, we're the guinea pigs, and good for us. Good for us. This is what Tompkins County does. We break new ground, and we innovate. At the same time, in breaking new ground, we're negotiating on behalf of how many other counties come behind us. We're also revealing problems with the law the way it was written. We're the first real-world application of this. We're beginning to understand maybe why Article 47, which was passed in 1993, hasn't had any activity until we went, because there are some hurdles. I do think that if we can work with the state insurance department and find reasonable middle ground positions, we will open the door for a lot of other communities to do what we're now trying to do. So it's worth the effort.
Let's keep remembering that. Frank?
Thanks, Martha. I really want to thank you for what you said about Don. I know a lot of us have been keeping track of what he's been spending a lot of time doing.
Yes.
And I think you're absolutely right. The county really, he deserves a real vote of thanks from the county. But I want to shift gears a little bit.
Sure.
Talk about the budget and the impact that the state is having or not having on us. Is there at some point will we have the opportunity to have an evaluation of what, like a snapshot of maybe at, we've just finished the first quarter of our calendar year, of our fiscal year.
Right.
The effect of the state's delay in making payments to not just our departments but to the agencies, and what organizations are in danger of maybe closing down because of the delay. Is that too much to get our arms around, Joe?
No. You know, to a certain level, we should be able to develop it pretty quickly. We won't be able to get down to the micro level, Frank, but yeah, I'd say if you give us a little time, maybe a couple of, I'm looking at David too, a couple of weeks maybe to do that kind of a snapshot assessment, we can certainly try to do it.
Because
what you're asking for is the effect of the delays in payments on
right. Because I'm hearing from some of the agencies that report to the Health Committee or through Human Health through Human Services Coalition to the Health Committee that it's. Not a pretty, I mean, we all know it's not a pretty picture, but the longer they delay, and now the budget is off by a week already, we really, anyway, you understand
yes,
what
I do I'm understand. Saying.
Okay, thank you.
Peter.
I it's hard for me to understand this reserve requirement mm-hmm. because, as you say, there's a big difference between a corporation which bang can go bankrupt and have no resources whatsoever, and a group of municipalities that have taxing authority. It can't just go bankrupt instantaneously. And there's just no way of passing a law saying if you ever end this thing, you agree to finance it for the next 6 months to pay off your previous obligations instead of having to pony it up now and sitting. I mean, it sounds absurd.
Right, I think,
as you describe it.
And it could be the way I described it, too. It's probably more logical than the way I've made it appear. I think, Peter, that the factor here is the consortium has a life of its own. It's not a municipality. It doesn't have taxing powers. Its members do. So it doesn't really have a direct link. It's the link is really through the obligation that we make by signing on to the consortium that if ever there's an assessment for special charges, we're obligated to step up and make that payment. So it's an indirect link to the government and therefore the taxpayers. But it's really that point that we tried to make today. Is there a legislative solution for it? Ultimately, I think there needs to be a legislative response to a number of the areas in this law that we found defective. My concern is the timeline on getting that law changed is longer than we want to spend to get this plan in place and start saving those dollars.
And as a reminder, it costs us $20,000 a month extra on our premiums compared to what the consortium rates would have been starting in January. Thank you very much, Joe.
Thank you.
I would like us to break for a five-minute break. I know we pretty much have simple committee reports without a lot of resolutions, but I think we need to give our full attention to your committee reports, so let's come back in 5 minutes. Thank you.